Welcome to New Zealand Vegan Podcast, episode 116. This is an episode I've been wanting to do for years, actually, and I haven't done it. It's really hard for me to articulate my thoughts, and it's a minefield of politics, which I try to avoid, believe it or not. It's hard to explain what I mean. I'm not averse to entering the welfarist, abolitionist political debate, but I'm certainly sometimes don't feel confident in other areas. I just feel them in my heart, but I don't know how to articulate them. But luckily today I've had some help from some comments that were left on Facebook by someone, and I'm going to quote them to help me articulate my thoughts. So my podcast that I am doing today is all about the assertion that we really try to make over and over again, and that veganism is easy, that veganism is very easy, and we really wish that people would stop perverting that beautiful simplicity, like they try to pervert all the other beautiful simplicities that we say in this quest for equal rights for non-human animals. So before I get started, I just want to recommend a podcast that I was in, but it's because it's on single issue campaigns, and it is really, I'm so glad that we did the podcast. What's happened is TAVS, the Abolitionist Vegan Society, has started doing podcasts as well, and I've been a guest on it, and the last episode that I did with Sarah Woodcock, who's the founder of the Abolitionist Vegan Society, was all about single issue campaigns, because we agree, Sarah and I, completely about single issue campaigns, and we talk about it all the time. And then we think, well, we try to write it down, and because things get so complicated, it's actually better to talk sometimes, because you have to use too many words when you're writing it down. Well, I'm not very good at being succinct. Sarah's really good at being succinct, but I'm not. But anyway, we did this fantastic podcast. I think it's great. It really, for me, explains everything I wanted to know. And from now on, I want people to know about my position at the very least. And I'm going to just refer people to it, because I haven't seen any arguments until now, and I doubt I'm going to see any after now, that weren't addressed in this podcast, because we've heard them all so many times before, and they are repeated, and they're quite often the same basic argument that these bans work and that it's effective and that it moves people towards veganism, blah blah blah. So we address all of the really common arguments that we have heard. I've yet to hear anything different than what we addressed. And so thank you for the people who left comments. So anyway, what you do is you go to the Abolitionist Vegan Society's website. So it's abolitionistvegansociety.org. Go to resources and scroll down to TAVS audio, and there is actually a bunch of episodes. I want to mention a couple of others. So the one I'm talking about is episode 3. Episode 1, it was the beginning of the episodes with people who have TAVS chapters. So I was interviewed there. And then in episode 2, she interviewed an advocate from New York. He doesn't have a chapter, but he's a TAVS advocate, and he's just so fantastic. Jameson Scala, I really recommend it. But hopefully Bubs is going to take some time away from his intensive studying and do an interview about his participation in TAVS New Zealand along with myself. And then the special episodes, which are sort of ones where Sarah was a guest on other people's shows, there's 4 of them. Episodes 1, 2, and 3 are great, but I really recommend episode 4. Episode 4 is a non-vegan on a main... Well, it's a non-vegan radio show. It's not an animal rights, or it's not a like ecology or a health show. It's just a radio show by Heather McCoy on KUCI Radio. It is so fantastic how Sarah manages that. I was so inspired, because the interviewer was not vegan, and was saying things like, I need a steak or my brain won't go right. But she asked it in a genuine way. But I, of course, instantly I thought, oh, wow. But Sarah just handled it so, so, so well. You just really recommend that you listen to it. So that's special episode 4 if you go to the TAVS audio page, like I said, in the resources section. So anyway, I'm going to refer people to those podcasts, and if people care enough I mean, if they really do genuinely want to learn, like they really have an interest and they like we want to do what's best and blah 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 blah, then they owe it to themselves and they owe it to us as a courtesy, and they definitely owe it to the non-humans to investigate our point of view by us, from us. And it shouldn't be looked at as this tedious, you know. I mean, I have to read welfarist stuff all the time and read it and listen to it. I listen to things, read about what Bruce Frederick said, I watch The Interviewer. I mean, it's I find it really painful, because I find it really depressing. I find it really defeatist and sad and speciesist. But in order to address, you know, to actually address the points, I have the courtesy of reading them. And when people leave comments and say, I think this, 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 and this, I address each comment because I want to show them that I've read it and that I have a response, that I'm not just, you know, it's so funny. We get accused of being cult members or of being just all kinds of things. Yet, when you look at a discussion, or at least, I mean, from my point of view, I guess you could say I'm biased, but you know, I, for example, I try to address every point that the person makes. That I say, you said this, and here's my response to that. You said this, and here's my response to that. And a lot of times, what I get in return is this, they repeat the same things that I just addressed, but they don't address any of the points that I actually made. And they usually just, so it's like they didn't even really read what I wrote. They just got an attitude about it because they didn't like the way I said it or what I, you know, or they just decided they suddenly don't like me. And it's sort of like a pointless exercise, but it seems pointless at the time, but I don't think it is because lots of other people are reading both sides, which is what I do. I like to read both sides as well of, I don't always get involved. I read what the others say. I read what the proponents of welfare or single issue say, and then I read the responses by all the abolitionists, and everybody has, you know, a different personality and a different way of doing things, but you know, it's a really useful way to learn, and it's also a useful way for people who are on the fence to see where they really stand. So it is useful, but it can be frustrating. Yeah, and then they just get make it personal and call you names. But anyway, so me and Sarah did this great episode. I'm really just going to tell people to listen to it. It's long because it's we address everything. We address everything. I can't think of anything in there that we haven't addressed. So it would be nice if people would take the time to actually seriously consider it before they just dismiss it, and then they just, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, don't they want to like hear the what we actually mean, or do they just happy with other people's misinterpretations of it? I don't know. So that's my first introduction, and I just want to say yesterday we did our street stall, the TAVS New Zealand chapter street stall on Queen Street, and it was a really positive day. It's very You always have, it's always positive doing vegan advocacy, no matter what. It's always a positive thing to do. If you do it non-violently, creatively, and you don't yell at people, and you just do it in a really open way, that's, for me, it's always been positive. However, there's always a couple of negative things. You always run into somebody, you know, in the whole crowd of people who's either really stubborn, or they just came along, they just wanted to argue, or maybe they got offensive, or they got upset, or maybe they just were very religious and they just, you know, you just it was just like it's in the Bible and you just couldn't actually reason with them or whatever. So generally you encounter, you know, one or two people who are not, you know, that just goes with the territory. More and more it's more positive, but yesterday it was all positive, every single one. It was great, right from the moment I opened to the last person we talked to. It was all positive. People either really wanted to learn, or they were going vegan, or they were vegan, but then they're like, well, I'm learning about abolition. And we met a couple of advocates who, well, I don't know if both, but one of them, she was a young person, and she said she's wanting to do vegan advocacy. She didn't even mention safe or animal welfare or anything. She literally said, I really want to do something that tells people what veganism is all about. And I just said, oh my gosh, that's so fantastic. So I'm going to try to help her set something up in her school where she can do that. It was just so inspiring to meet her. So we put her on the mailing list, and hopefully, you know, she'll actually make it happen. We'll try to help her make it happen, but people have to make it happen themselves as well. It's very important. But it was such a great day. I really had such a good day, and I didn't even make very fancy cupcakes. I had some icing that I'd made. I put it in the freezer. I didn't pipe it on. I just slapped it on with a knife, and it wasn't very thick, and it was just chocolate cupcakes. But they were so delicious because it doesn't matter what they look like, it's what they taste like. So that was really good. Gave away some recipes, gave away heaps of information. And just one more thing, our next big event that we're doing is the Eco West Festival. It's an actual week-long festival. Oh, is it a week long? I think, and out in West Auckland, and it's all about eco. So it's all about recycling and renewable, etc., etc. And then on the last day, which is Sunday, April the 13th, they have a day, and that's when you can have, like, that's when we're going to have our tent and we're going to set it all up. I'm definitely going to be there. It depends on exams and everything for Bubs, because he's right in the middle of some quite intensive university w studying. So it's going to be a really great day. It's always a great day, but I love doing festivals. It's always different. It's always interesting doing festivals. I like to do the non-animal festivals. I haven't done really any animal festivals except for Animal Awareness Day. Yeah, I've already talked about my reasons for that, why I prefer just like sort of generic festivals. But Eco Day, obviously it's all about ecology and stuff. So I'm going to hope, I'll just be there with the same message. But obviously we're going to talk about the environment as well. We always do anyway. But I'm just going to be there doing the thing. So that's exciting. It's nice to have something to look forward to. And I'll post it online and everything when it starts to come up, and I'll send it out to the mailing list and everything like that. All right, so let me get into the podcast. So, okay, so there is veganism is easy. I say that. I look back on where I used to live in New York City before I was vegan. When I was living in New York City, I was really struggling financially, quite. Really, really struggling financially. Not because I was born poor or anything. It was just life choices that I made after I went there from the Dominican Republic. I didn't have any money, and I managed to get on my feet. I'm lucky. I mean, as a woman, I experience discrimination, but I'm white. I benefit from white privilege, which I don't like, but I have to admit that I benefit from it. I want to change that. I want other people to benefit from everything. I don't want it just to be one class of society benefiting. But I know that has helped me. So when I was destitute, I got a job as a waitress, and then I found a place to live, and all those kinds of things. But if I was black, I doubt I would have been able to get safe again as quickly as I did. But anyway, I didn't have a lot of money at all. I mean, in America, food is really cheap, especially compared to New Zealand. Unbelievably cheap compared to New Zealand. And when I first got there, because I really didn't have any money or a job. So I got a job. I got not a job, but I got a position. This is kind of personal. I don't know how personal I should get, but I was living in a hostel, and the people who owned the hostel were Australian. I'd heard about them. So I first went to a hostel in Harlem, which was like $10 a night, and you shared a room. It was bunk beds, and you shared a room, all mixed sexes. But I had to pay, and I literally, I think I had $50 when I got to New York City. So I found this other hostel called the Banana Bungalow. They're also in Miami, and the one in New York is on the Upper East Side, and it was owned by these Australians. And so I walked in and I said, "Hey," because I heard rumors that you can work at the front desk and the hostel will let you stay there for free. So instead of paying people a job to work at the front desk, they'll just give you a bed. So you get the cheapest bed. So again, it's shared dorm in a bunk bed and blah blah blah. But I managed to have a roof over my head, so I didn't go in the street. So I was working at this hostel, and I would work at reception 8 hours, and then I would get my bed for the night. And I did that for a while until I finally got a job once a week that paid me $60 a night and plus tips, and then I finally got another job. But I was living on basically nothing, and I remember I actually literally people were giving us food in the hostel, and so it was a couple of weeks there where I was living off basically the kindest of people there feeding me. I was not eating very, very, very much at all. But in the first couple of weeks when I lived there, I went down to the bottom of town, and you could get a big plate of noodles and vegetables for $2, and I would eat that once a day, and that would be, I would live on that. And it was a big plate, and in New Zealand it would be about $12. I mean, New Zealand's ridiculous. But anyway, it was vegetables. It was not, there was no meat. If I wanted the meat dishes or eggs or anything like that, it would have been $4 or something. This was the cheapest food, was the vegetables and the noodles. So, I mean, at the time I wasn't vegan and I didn't even care. I didn't think on those terms. I was just like, I need food. But that tells you, right? And then I remember, so I do think that if I was vegan, you know, I would have been able to survive probably easier on the diet that I had than if I wasn't. And if I was vegan at the time, and I, let's say I needed clothing, like I went to the Salvation, when I finally got like a little, my paycheck, I would bought all my clothes secondhand, you know, quite cheap and stuff. And I would have bought the secondhand synthetic clothing that I could. And if you're relying purely on donations and, you know, that's that, and there's really, really nothing other to choose from, then that makes things different. I also had, there was an interaction with someone who has a car, and she went vegan after she bought the car, and the seats are all covered with leather, I believe, which I thought is more expensive. I mean, my car certainly doesn't have leather. I mean, thank goodness, but I did think it was more expensive. But anyway, the person claimed that they couldn't afford to get them redone, couldn't afford a new car, couldn't afford to sort of replace the car. And I was thinking, wow, okay, what do you do? And I thought, well, so the apparently the family was trying to make them out to be a hypocrite. Well, if it was me and I was in that situation and I really had no other way of, you know, continuing to earn a living or whatever, trying to work towards getting another car, I'd cover the car with, I would cover it with cloth seats, with cloths, like I would buy whatever, I'd get secondhand material, I don't know what, I'd rip up an old sheet, I don't know, I would cover it up. I would not have it out in the open. And anyway, you know, just there are things that you can do that can... And then, you know, if the family can say, "What? Why are all your things covered with cloth?" You could say, you could then use that as a thing to say, "This is this terrible world we live in. There's speciesism constantly inconveniencing everything I want to try to do. It's inconveniencing me, and I'm, you know, not a wealthy person, and therefore I'm covering this with cloth. It's not ideal." And yeah, these are the kind of things that make this that people try to complicate our message of veganism being easy with. They that doesn't mean that veganism isn't easy. We're constantly inconvenienced by speciesism, in terms of in New Zealand there's no vegan restaurants that I know of anymore. Oh, maybe there is a vegan restaurant in New Plymouth, I believe it is the Loving Heart, but you know, you hear of all these restaurants, but they're not vegan. They have either one dish that has egg, or like I went to a restaurant in a place that's people always say it's vegan, and I never agree. I never assume that people are right about that, especially around here. So I'm like, hello. I'm like, is everything on the menu vegan? Do you have anything with egg or anything? And he said, oh, no, all vegan, all vegan, all vegan. And I was like, holy moly, am I actually sitting in a vegan restaurant? Because ever since the Loving Heart closed down in Auckland, there hasn't been any. And I was like, yay. And then he said, oh, except for the ice cream. We serve ice cream from cow's milk. So there you go. So it's not a vegan restaurant, but you can safely order the food minus the ice cream off the menu, and they don't have, you know, so, I mean, you can get by, but it's not a vegan restaurant. But, you know, it's not the same as in New York where there's vegan restaurants everywhere. So maybe in New Zealand you've gone vegan, you have a lot of friends, none of them are vegan because it's still new, and their friends are like, let's go out to dinner, we're going to Mexican, we're going to the steak hut, we're going to da-da-da. And yeah, maybe you're inconvenienced by speciesism and that you can't just go to the restaurant and order whatever you want off the menu. But that's that is a minor inconvenience. It is not a matter of life and death, and, you know, you're not in a concentration, you're not in a, like a refugee camp, starving and anything like that. So when we talk about veganism being easy, what we're trying, the message that we're trying to give and that we wish other people would do instead of just going out of their way, and it's sort of based on this like political correctness, like they want to, it's all based on this supposed, they point to us as being elitists and saying, they're elitists, they're in a privileged position, you know, these are also people who are in privileged positions. But they don't want to say that veganism's easy because they're either scared that they're going to be accused of ignoring poverty in the world, or they're just doing it because they want to combat what abolitionists are saying in any way, shape, or form. That's just like the goal in life. I actually did a Facebook update a while ago that illustrates it perfectly to me in terms of the advocacy that we're doing, because none of us are in the Democratic Republic of Congo. And the problem there, I mean, it's difficult to be vegan in the Democratic Republic of Congo if you're in a refugee camp, maybe. I mean, maybe it is. I mean, I don't know. I'm guessing they're just eating rice and things. But that's sort of like it's not the point. The point is that they're refugees. It's difficult to live. It's difficult to survive, you know, when you're in the middle of, I mean, in a war zone. I keep saying Democratic Republic of Congo, but I don't know if that's still, the crisis there is as bad as it was. I don't know. There's all kinds of places where there are where there are refugee camps and people are dying of starvation. So that's a ridiculous example to use when you're talking about us as vegan advocates saying it's easy to be vegan. That doesn't mean the fact that there are people in wars who are being oppressed, slaughtered, just genocide happening, and they're being deprived of the very basic necessities of life, including water, which is, you know, happens to be vegan, right? That doesn't mean that veganism isn't easy. That just means there's huge injustices and that for them, survival isn't easy. So I don't think we should be complicating our vegan advocacy that veganism is easy, because if we create the world that we want and there's equality and when we stop oppressing people based on their ethnic group or their skin color, and we stop letting kleptocrats, you know, control the entire world's resources and take everything for themselves, you know, that will solve a lot of problems in the world. And that's the problem. The problem isn't veganism. People keep blaming veganism or acting as if veganism is this big problem because there are people, you know, people starving. They forget that non-veganism, first of all, causes a lot of the starvation. The battle for resources is getting intense, mostly because of the resources that we use are non-vegan. So when we talk about veganism being easy, we really need people to get behind that message, because the people that we are advocating to in our communities, to them, veganism is easy. So I can speak to someone who was never in a refugee camp, and you know, but has been extremely poor in inner city. I lived when I was living in the Bronx. I wasn't living in a place where there was gun violence every single night. It wasn't like a really high crime, terrifyingly high crime area. So I can't talk about those kind of food deserts. But where I lived in the Bronx, it was Gun Hill Road, and then I lived on Barker Avenue, and I lived in these giant, they weren't projects officially, but I lived in like building Q, I think I was in. So it looked like projects, but it wasn't officially projects, because it wasn't actually officially a project. It was a lot of mostly Latin people living there, because everybody's segregated around the world, as we know. In New Zealand, everywhere, there's just segregation. So in this part of the Bronx, it was mostly Latinos that I was living in. And the other parts of where I was living in Barker Avenue, there was African-American. So I remember, like, it was, to me, it was like, it was a wasteland. I mean, it was just these streets and the train. We lived right by the train stop, so there was just the subway, and there was this one sort of bar that was, like, I used to have to walk past it, and I used to work very into the early hours of the morning, and it was quite scary. Just for any woman being alone anywhere in the world at 3 o'clock in the morning is scary. But I made it, and, you know, nothing happened. But I don't even think there was a bodega, like, within four blocks. There was a supermarket not too far away. I could walk to the supermarket. And, yeah, there was not very many fresh vegetables. I mean, I remember it as being... very, very little. But I'll tell you what there was. There was cans of lentils and cans of garbanzo beans. There was salt and there was pepper, there was rice. Now, so I know that if I was vegan and I was living there, I would easily and more cheaply be vegan than if I had tried to find meat or, especially if I was non-vegan and I was looking for good quality, what they call good quality in terms of like not actual, constant risk of Ebola. I mean, I think there's a risk in all meat consumption, but I just already know. Like, I never lived. I lived in areas where, the cheapest food is the vegan food. The cheapest food for people in refugee camps is vegan food. It's big bulk rice and beans and flour and wheat, and you're making the breads, and fresh vegetables are a different issue. Everybody in the world ought to have access to fresh fruits and vegetables. That's a justice thing. That is a matter of basic justice. It's not, the fact that that's not happening is a matter of global injustice and inequality, which veganism hopes to address, But the basic tenet that veganism is easy, it's easy to find vegan alternatives for animal products. That is a basic truth that we ought to get behind, especially when we are doing vegan advocacy in our countries, in our communities, where that is practically applicable instantly, and there's no ambiguity and there's no mitigating circumstances. We just don't need to go there. If you want to, if you're terrified of being accused of being elitist, then ask people to back that up. Ask them if you're saying that, if you're making an issue about the fact that the people in refugee camps aren't wearing vegan shoes. Are you making that an issue? No, I don't think so. I think that what we're making an issue is the fact that the refugee camps exist in the first place, and that people are not having access to the basic necessities of life, such as food and water. We want it to be vegan food and we want it to be vegan clothing, but there's no clothing and there's no food. So it's just, I see, this is why I didn't do this podcast, because it's just so complicated. But I hate how people create these things that we have to spend all our time on, because they're undermining our vegan advocacy with this effort to appear. They're just trying to appear, it's like a faux concern or something. Maybe not everyone, but anyway. So I do know that there's real concern. I mean, poverty is a real concern, and inner city poverty. And like I said, I was not born extremely poverty stricken, living in the projects, in a race that is incredibly oppressed by society. So I can't, I can't obviously come from that point of view. But I do know that there is a large African American vegan community that is putting forth the idea that, reinforcing the idea that it's easy and it's cheap. And I know lots of people from other countries in the world that do have real poverty issues. People from Uruguay, people from South America and other places, saying all the poor people eat vegan food here. They don't get enough of it, and they might not get enough fresh leafy vegetables, so they might be suffering nutritional deficiencies. But it's not because they're eating a vegan diet that they're suffering nutritional deficiencies. It's because they're poor and there's inequality that they're suffering from nutritional deficiencies. It's not because veganism is hard per se, okay? So, for example, myself, like I said, I look back, I try to put myself back up there on Barker Avenue, where I had so little money. I mean, I was really didn't have a lot of money to spend on food, certainly not on clothing. I used to buy everything secondhand, but at least I had money. I mean, compared to a lot of people, I was rich. I was rich, 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 rich. Don't get me wrong, but I'm just saying, there's no way I was going to be buying any vegan ice cream or any vegan, faux burgers or whatever. But I tell you what, I would live on if I'm ever plunged back into where I really have very little money, I will be eating rice and beans and lentils and flavoring them with spices. And yeah, it might be boring, and yeah, it might not be a fully balanced diet, but I'm certainly not going to turn around and eat eggs or cow's milk or meat instead, and then try to claim like that's somehow, first of all, nutritionally superior, which, as we know, as vegans know, it is not, and number two, that it's cheaper, which, as we clearly know, and as we clearly know just from the economics of the world and just everything, that it's not, it's more expensive to eat non-vegan products. So I almost wish that I had, I don't almost wish, I wish that I had been vegan my whole life, all through these experiences, so I could turn around and say, you know, if where there's a will, there's a way. If you take other animal interests seriously, and unless you are like we can't levitate, and there's animal products and things that we don't know about, or that we, that we're sort of forced upon us. That's speciesism doing that. That's speciesism. That's why we have to fight speciesism, not reinforce it. And that infuriates me. And I've done a podcast about that before. It infuriates me that but the response to it is not to give up and say, oh, well, it's impossible to be vegan, therefore we might as well just don't give a hard time to vegetarians because they're drinking milk because you've got a computer or you drive a car or whatever. That's not helping people. It's actually not, it's not honest. You're actually not being honest. Like, they come across thinking that they're being really, really honest. Like, we are being honest. These people who say veganism's easy are ignoring this, or they're being dishonest, or it's just to suit their agenda, or they're privileged, or they're elitist. And I disagree. So I just think it's so important. So yeah, I mean, if you're really struggling and you live in a food desert and you've only got the bodega, or you've got you don't even have a supermarket. There's always some place. I mean, where are you buying your milk from? If you're not buying, a lot of people, they're not buying milk. But I mean, I'm sure there are food deserts where there's tons of fast food restaurants around. Believe me, where I lived in Barker Avenue, there wasn't even that. I mean, there was nothing. But that one scary little bar and just desolation. Really, it was just giant apartment blocks, but there wasn't a lot of businesses there, but there was a supermarket there. So I can admit that there was a supermarket. It was a few blocks away. And I do believe there was a bodega. And obviously, if you can get the train and you can go somewhere, and I used to carry my groceries back on the train is what I used to do, because I worked downtown. And then I would carry my groceries back. And when I lived in Harlem, that's a little closer to other grocery stores. There's a few grocery stores there. But, you know, when I just lived on rice and beans, anyway, $5 for some rice and beans. I mean, it's just, and people, you know, people have always said this, and yeah, it's, we always back these up. And there are people who are living in poorer parts of the world and stuff who back this up to us. But let's get on to the sort of the more, let's get on to some of the arguments that, this person said on, okay, so I'm just going to read you these comments because I think they say it way better than me. The whole point of this podcast is to try to convince people to stop saying that veganism's difficult, and then when challenged on it and when told that, you know, it's easy, you're vegan, you're not a millionaire, know that, you know, da da da, and then they start pulling all these things out like world poverty, right? Which I hope I've already addressed. Like, the problem is poverty. The problem is not veganism. Veganism is easy, but to say that, to say that veganism is not easy because people in concentration, and sorry, I keep saying that, people in refugee camps might not be able to have vegan shoes, or whatever their arguments these people are saying are, is like saying that wearing shoes is impossible. Like, don't say it's easy to wear shoes. I mean, if I went into my neighborhood and said, you know, it's really difficult to wear shoes, wearing shoes is difficult, and people would be like, what are you talking about? And I'd be like, well, because, you know, there are certain people in the world who don't have shoes. Well, the issue is not shoes, the issue is not wearing shoes, the issue is this inequality. So it's the same thing, like, oh, drinking water is difficult. Like, for me, it's easy to drink water. It's easy to make things out of water, but it's hard for some people to even get fresh water. But that doesn't, I don't even know. I can't. It's so frustrating to me. Okay, and the reason I haven't done this podcast is because, as usual, it's just so all over the place. And there's always going to be someone who's going to, I don't know. Anyway, so I just want to read you what this very wise, articulate person said, because I asked them if I could read it, and they said yes. Okay, so here is the first comment by this person. She was on Gary Francione's page and had been discussing on another thread somewhere else, I don't quite know where, but apparently was discussing, because, you know, the abolitionists are the ones, we say veganism is easy, Gary Francione says veganism is easy, and then all this other, like I said, these mostly sort of anti-Gary Francione people, it seems. Oh, right, I did this Facebook update which said, sorry, I keep going off on tangents. I did a Facebook update that to me sums it up in terms of not necessarily those vegans who are saying, what about world poverty, da da da, because I think they're just being deliberately, I don't know. But for people who's like the welfarist movement making it veganism seem really difficult because you might have to give up pork or, you know, whatever. That for me is what's really insidious, and these other people are just reinforcing that even though they don't think they are. But I said for those, the difference between those who state that veganism is easy and those who state that veganism is difficult, in quotes, is that those who state that it is easy are focused on the victims, and those who state that it is, quote, difficult are focused on themselves. And I really, really mean that, and I really stand behind it. But then, of course, you get the same bunch of people saying, oh, what about the people who are dying of starvation? It's not easy for them. And it's just like, way to miss the entire point and totally be detrimental to this whole community activism that we're trying to do, to wake people up to the fact that they have a moral right to go vegan, and that it's easy for them to go vegan, and that they ought to do it, and that by doing so, we are going to then create a paradigm in which we do not tolerate inequality and starvation amongst our own species, let alone the things we're doing to other species. But no, they don't want to get on there. They don't want to get behind that. They want to just pick and just do anything they can to undermine this movement towards global nonviolence and equality and this rejection of discrimination that we're doing, because I have no idea why they would want to do that, but whatever their motive is, I just am so unimpressed. But anyway, so this person had a comment, and she said, okay, here she goes. I just recently had someone who regards themselves as an animal rights advocate tell me that because of world poverty, saying that veganism is easy and cheap and that plant foods are widely available is coming from a very privileged position. That's what I call having shite for brains, frankly. These people really ought to find another hobby. And she said, at least they'll only be engaging in self-harm and not, like she was saying, you know, they could find another hobby, like self-flagellation. It was being tongue-in-cheek there, saying, and at least they'll only be engaging in self-harm and not harm of billions of sentient beings whom they posture as representing. And that's very important to me. I really do think that that's important. I believe that it's really detrimental to make these kind of statements. They seem to claim that it's detrimental for us to tell people where we are when we're doing vegan activism, where it's extremely easy and cheap to be vegan, that we don't have any right to tell them, these people, that because across the world there's inequality and starvation. I'm sorry, it's just nonsense. That was the first comment. And then the person who had been engaging in this through with other people let us know that what she did after the person accused them of that had said, I pointed out to this animal rights activist that they had no right to assume that I'm in a privileged position. I'm guessing that this person is solidly middle class and relatively privileged, yet presumes the right to speak on behalf of the disadvantaged without bothering to find out what is their actual reality, and using their plight as a cheap argument against promoting veganism as easy, inexpensive, and the opposite of elitist, which is, though they go on to say, it's dishonest and it is actually disrespectful to both humans and non-humans. I couldn't agree more. This person was articulating things that I've been percolating and been wanting to do a podcast on for the longest time, and I just was like, I'm just going to get in over my head, and, you know, because I do try to be careful. I do try. It might not come across that way. Okay, and this is one of my favorite comments. They go on to say, in fact, to use a pseudo-class argument to bolster the worst class-based oppression that exists, that of humans oppressing non-humans, by misrepresenting veganism as for the privileged, is about as low as it gets in my book. And I couldn't agree more. I'm going to post this actual commentary. So like I said, I didn't see the thread that they were talking about, that they were engaged in, but I just loved these comments because I know the type of thing that goes, I mean, I've seen it. And even in response to my Facebook thing, apparently somebody made a poster of it, and there was all kinds of, it's funny, you know, it's really weird. Like, I saw that somebody had made a poster of my comment, and they said veganism hard. They sort of changed the wording. They said the difference between those who say veganism is easy and those who say it's hard. And then there's there's most of the time people say, yeah, right on. But then you get this kind of reaction. So I've seen the reactions, and I've also heard it for right from the beginning whenever Gary Francione says veganism is easy, and you just see all these comments. So I agree very much with this person. So they go on to say, what I'm really reacting to here is the kind of confused and insidious attitudes that are so characteristic of the massively retrograde and dominant trend of welfareism, which refuses to promote veganism as the moral baseline and only entrenches speciesism. That's what I'm reacting to as well. People can turn around and say that we're trying, you know, we're being privileged and ignoring world poverty. I do think it's ridiculous, and I do hope that, well, I know there are some people who are saying that. It's going to be up to you whether or not you think we should get out there in our communities and be vegan and show people that vegan is easy, or whether we should, just entrench, the speciesism. So I was so happy when I read these comments. I was like, oh, yay, this is my next podcast I've been wanting to do for ages. And I basically responded as well. And so I said, so this... I said I've been meaning for ages to do a podcast about it. So for example, there's this alleged pseudo concern about the fact that people in refugee camps might not be able to go vegan. They might not have access to any clothing, shoes, or food for that matter, which is the real issue, actually. Indeed, the fact that there are refugees, period, is the actual issue. I said it's incredibly harmful to the exploited non-humans, and then this lovely person who made these great comments came back and said they took, because they were involved in this very long thread about this. Good on them. Gosh, I don't have the patience. They said that someone who says the person came back to me to continue her story of the saga that she was involved in. She said, on the same page, someone who says they're very active in promoting veganism made exactly the kind of objection that you just described. The person that she's talking about said, I can imagine a person with government tanks firing machine gun rounds through asbestos-lined shanty walls, turning up her nose at the phrase, it's easy to be vegan, unquote. I mean, can you believe it? I'm telling you, this is the kind of thing that people are saying. And then our lovely commentator's response was basically, hello, nothing in that situation is easy. Why single out veganism? It's probably hard to get water too. And your house might be collapsing around your ears, but we don't conclude this means drinking water is not easy or living in houses is not easy. It's all so absurd. These situations are to do with political factors that have zero to do with veganism. I mean, if vegan advocates come out with this kind of balderdash, then words fail me. It's as if they have some kind of self-destruct gene. And I do think, well, I don't think it's self-destruct. I think it's destruct the vegan movement gene. Here's another question. Oh, and I think, another comment was... by our commentator was, I wonder if it's similar to how non-vegans suddenly become concerned about plant suffering when confronted with the argument for veganism. Do these privileged people who say that veganism is for the privileged concern themselves about the plight of the underprivileged at any other time? That's a valid question. I mean, maybe they do. I'm not saying they don't, but it's a valid... Do they seriously oppose, or are they involved in any way in doing anything to change the class basis of inequality? Valid question. They might be or they might not. Or is it that they suddenly become solicitous about the poor and disadvantaged only when the privilege argument is convenient for opposing our claim that veganism is easy, cheap, and available to everyone? If they are vegan themselves, as is often the case, why does that claim bother them so much? It seems perverse. Is there some kind of resistance to the idea that veganism really is so accessible to everyone, that it is so egalitarian and non-elitist? Anyone who can afford the cheapest foods can be a vegan, in terms of their diet, Obviously, this is me now talking in terms of their diet, but I also know that there's a lot of synthetic clothing out there, and cleaning products to clean your house or to keep yourself, to keep your hygiene. You can use plant-based products to do that, and baking soda to keep your teeth clean. And you know, it's not. It is actually cheaper to be vegan. The comment, that was just me on a tangent. Then the commentator goes on and says, perhaps this threatens to rob the fact that veganism is actually really accessible. You know, putting aside if you're sitting inside of a building that's being bombed, but then again, life is a little inaccessible to you then, isn't it? The commentator goes on to say that perhaps this idea threatens to rob some people of a form of identity as being special in being vegan. After all, if all the plebs and the unhip can all do it, what use is it? More reassuring, perhaps, to maintain that it's out of reach of poor people while feigning concern for poor people. Only speculating, and I agree, that's only speculation, and that is a speculation that I've often had, and I think it's, I do speculate it, and I've never said it out loud except for to one person in a private conversation before, but when I read that last sentence, I was like, oh, I'm glad I'm not the only one thinking that. It is a speculation, and it is a dangerous one, because, I mean, speaking for myself, not for the person who made the comment, I really agree with it, but I often feel that way. Like, you know, I a lot of times I think, like, when I started to realize the resistance, okay, anyway, before I go into that, because this is another topic, I just want to say I really hope that we've convinced you to tell people that veganism is easy, because it is, to not try to invent these scenarios where life is basically out of reach for people in order to make the excuse that veganism is difficult. It's actually detrimental, it's harmful, and it's actually, to me, dishonest. It just is. And I think that these comments sum it up really nicely, what I wanted to say. So thank you to the commentator for saying those, for allowing me to share them, and for articulating them so well. And I've edited out a couple of swear words, and I understand where the frustration comes from, believe me, but I'm trying to keep my podcast like without having to put I don't think there's that much wrong with swearing, but I want it to just be able for, you know, grandmas and little babies to listen to. So I hope that I made my point. I've been wanting to do this episode for so long. I hope it worked. Anyway, but what I'll say about that last sentence about how, you know, this form of identity, and like, because I sometimes wonder, you know, when I saw all this resistance from a lot of vegans about promoting veganism, and the answer was always, it's too extreme, people won't get it, it's too much, or people will never change, people are just, they're never going to become vegan, just give it up, it's pointless. And then, you know, the abolitionist movement started, and we're like, you're wrong. And then we got told, and then we're like, we're telling everybody they should go vegan, we're telling everybody, and that's what we're going to do. Too bad if you don't like it, you know. And then we were told, like, oh, you're the vegan club. And I thought, I sort of look and I'm like, no, hang on a minute, you're the vegan club, you've got your little club where you all stroke each other's back and say, we're so special, we're so compassionate, we're so wonderful, we're so this, they don't get it, they're never going to go vegan, we're not going to even bother telling them about it because we're so special. And you go out there and say, just eat pork once a week, if not twice, or just buy burgers 3 times a week instead of 5, or just buy cage-free and da-da-da-da-da, or whatever it is that you're telling people, you're the one who's in your little vegan club. And I do think that, you know, it's for some people, it was this really strong form of identity that was limited to them. They felt really special. They don't want, you know, your big-bellied, mustached, next-door neighbor Bob to be vegan, and his, you know, kids with their, I don't know, I mean, I almost feel like, because when I look at the future, there's still going to be problems, and people are still going to argue, and, you know, God, everybody to be vegan, you know, I mean, it's not about, like, I just want to be able to walk down the street and not be inconvenienced by speciesism at all. So, like, I want to be able to go into, a restaurant, a cheap restaurant, and just order fries and know that they're vegan fries. They're not being, there's no other animal products in there. They haven't been frying chicken corpses in there or bits of, cows' bodies. I mean, I want every Tom, Dick, and Harry and Mary Jane and Joe, Jody, to be vegan. From the hipsters or whatever labels you want to use to punks to, the yuppies. I mean, but I really wonder sometimes if people are concerned about. I mean, for me, it was such a sad thought. I just thought, don't think that, Elizabeth. You can't possibly think that these people are withholding veganism, keeping it to themselves. You know what I mean? I just thought you can't think that. And I just want to let you know, I'm not. I try not to think that. I really do. And even if there are a couple of people like that, because there's a couple of people like everything. Anything's possible in this world. There's always going to be someone, isn't there? But I'd say it would be the minority. I just really think that that's a really. I try not to indulge that thought. It's too depressing, quite frankly, that people are, withholding veganism because they want to keep it to themselves and they can't stand the thought of their annoying neighbors becoming their equals or so. I don't know. This is terrible. I shouldn't even be going there. But I mean, I just thought it was interesting that I wasn't the only one who had that sort of really scary, scary thought. But thank goodness, if that is the case, which, like I said, I'm only speculation, and that's definitely not the case with the abolitionist movement. We were telling everybody to go vegan. Don't care where you're from, who you are, and yeah, and we're doing it in our communities. We're not. I am a very privileged person. That's true. I am. And I'm also talking to a lot of other privileged people in my community because I live in a country where there's plenty of food and water, and we're very lucky, and we most certainly have a moral obligation to go vegan, to end world poverty, to end discrimination, to end all violence, and to lift people out of poverty, including people in our own country. There's poverty here, and there are people going without food here. Okay, that's not, that doesn't mean that veganism's hard. That means that there is inequality, which is what the abolitionist movement is trying to address. That's why we don't agree with the xenophobic single issue campaigns and the speciesist and the sexist welfarist campaigns. I mean, it's very consistent, and it's very pragmatic. And we live in the real world. We often get told by people, well, you're not living in the real world. Well, I'm curious to know what the real world is. The real world, one in which they think that they have a right to withhold veganism from people. I actually think that that is a terrible thing to do. So anyway, how long was that? Almost 53 minutes. Okay, not too bad. That's pretty good. Thanks so much to this commentator. Otherwise, I'd still be blabbing, blabbing, and going around in circles and up and down and back and forth, which is how I mostly do these kinds of topics. So bottom line is, veganism is easy, it's cheap. Get out there in your communities and lead by example and let everybody know that. Let's create a world in which there are no children dying of starvation. There are no people deprived of water and shelter and basic clothing. And we all equally have access to fresh water and fresh fruit and vegetables, as well as rice and beans and spices. Okay? I don't think we need the vegan ice cream and the vegan burgers and stuff. If we have to get rid of all that stuff, good. It's packaging, it's none of it. So let's be, realize that the haves have so much because others have so little. And the haves, us, we need to realize we need to not have so much. We need other people to have as much. So it's like a balance. It's what's called a balance. So open your mind and get out there and help us create this world and keep it consistent and keep it real and do it. And let's be honest. I mean, I'm not saying be dishonest with people. When people say, if people, I haven't actually had anyone say it, but if people say, people often say, what about people, what about the Inuit and all those kinds of things? And I say, well, first of all, are you Inuit? And they're like, no. And I'm like, okay, well, let's talk about you. But I said, but you know what? If we create a world in which, you know, veganism is the synonymous with being human, we will make it for the Inuit to be able to survive and thrive on a vegan diet. They have to want to do it. They have to believe in nonviolence. They have to see that they haven't got any right to exploit animals when they don't need to. They don't even right to kill them. They don't need to, because we can make accessible nonviolent products. And because we'll be a vegan world, we'll be doing it in the most ecological way we possibly can. There's all kinds of innovations around hydroponics and things like that and all this amazing stuff. I mean, just poverty of ambition, poverty of thought, it kills me. I don't want anything to do with that. It really can't stand it. So I tell people, you know, we want to create a world in which everybody has access to fresh fruit and water. And I even say to those people, you know, I know that there are people in refugee camps who don't have any food and don't have any access to clothing and things like that. But right now, you know, let's create that. Let's create a world and let's fight that inequality. And if you're going over there and you're doing work and you're helping, you're actually helping and saving lives, good on you. But be vegan while you're doing it. Show them that they could be vegan. Encourage veganism. Remind people that it takes a lot less water and a lot less land to produce vegan products than it does to feed all the cattle and the pigs and all those kinds of things. And that there'll be less interactions with wild animals who are being poached and who are actually, and then there's like dangerous deaths, there's danger occurring because humans are being killed by the wild animals because we keep encroaching on their territory, or because they attack our cattle that we want to grow. I mean, there's all these things. It's like, let's really stay focused. And I know that we are, but there's always these people who are going to try to waste time. And I do think it is, because I don't think it's being entirely honest, and they might disagree. I'm sure they do. And like I said, the motives are speculative. I can only speculate on the motives, and I really, you know, maybe oughtn't speculate on the motives, but I do hope that I've put forth the reason why I do think it's really damaging what to do that is, to constantly say, you can't say that veganism's easy, that's the wrong thing to do. I just think that that is so hurtful to the movement of nonviolence and to the non-human victims and to all the humans who we want to benefit from veganism, but who are basically dying of starvation and deprivation and cold and being killed in wars and all these kinds of things. Let's do our best. I mean, I don't live where there's war. I mean, I can only do what I can do where I am, and I'm going to keep it real with the people where I am, and you should too. Okay, thanks so much for listening. Blah, 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 blah. I'm all over the place as usual. I'm going to go, and I hope that you have a great week doing vegan advocacy. Don't forget the TAVS challenge. It's a fantastic way to get involved in vegan advocacy, is to just do that. There's resources available. There's you know, heaps of inspiration. So check it out at the Abolitionist Vegan Society's website. And also on the Abolitionist Approach website, you have to read, watch the videos, you know, really absorb all the knowledge on there. There's also pamphlets available. Obviously, the Abolitionist Approach pamphlets are invaluable. They're available in multiple languages. The Abolitionist Vegan Society pamphlets are available in Spanish and French, with more languages to come. And you have your voice. And if you can't afford any pamphlets, or you haven't got any pamphlets, you know, there's all kinds of things you can do. You can just talk to people at your jobs, or just, you know, just be vegan and be unequivocal and let them know it's easy, please. Okay, thank you so much for listening, and I'll be back. Bye.